Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com. Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
Special funding for the podcast of On Point is provided by Boston University School of Law, dedicated to excellence in teaching and to preparing lawyers for global challenges.
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The message from Barack Obama's big economy speech was on reporters' desks this morning well before showtime. From his text, quote, "Only government can break the vicious cycles that are crippling our economy," unquote. It's been the Obama message all week, and again today, the economic situation is bad and getting worse. A huge stimulus package is urgently required. Major elements are already on the table. The debate and jostling is on. There's not much time, he says. This hour, On Point, what's in the Obama stimulus package, and will it work? We will hear in a moment from two economists with different angles on the issue. Joining me first from Washington is Greg Ipp, U.S. economics editor at The Economist magazine. Greg, always good to have you.
Hi, Tom.
So here's Obama, big, big speech today in the text out early this morning. What's the storm that he's speaking into, Greg?
Well, it could be the worst recession really since the Great Depression, Tom. I mean, we've already seen this recession continue for a year with millions of jobs lost. The unemployment rate approaching 7% could be in double digits before it's all over. And really no sign that the factors that got us into this, which is to say the collapsing housing market and the problems in the banking system, are at an end. And you see estimates out there that by this time next year, the economy will be operating 7 to 8% below its normal potential level. That's about $1 million in foregone income. And so you can see there's a giant hole there for the government to plug.
What is the shape of the stimulus? I mean, begin to walk us into it. Obama's been talking about it all week. People have been surprised by the size of the tax cut element here, $300 billion for individuals and corporations. He's talking $775 billion. Others are talking more. He said it could go higher. What are the major elements of what he's proposing as the cure, Greg?
What Obama has told us is that it would be at the high end of what his team has been thinking about, but at the low end of what some people have been recommending. And I take that to mean it'll be closer to the $775 billion figure over 2 years. There's two major pieces to it, Tom, spending and tax cuts. The spending part has been well telegraphed. They want to do a lot more in terms of public works spending, helping states and local governments rebuild bridges and mass transit and so forth. And then there will be direct aid to states to help them meet their Medicaid and unemployment insurance bills against the background of very tight budgets. The tax cut portion is interesting because that became much more central in the last week as the Obama team reached out to the minority Republicans in Congress in an effort to both make this bipartisan and to dissuade them from putting up procedural roadblocks when the fiscal stimulus package comes to be voted on. So although certain aspects of the tax situation, such as a proposed $1,000 per household tax credit for workers, that's been a fixture of Obama's plan for a very long time. But he's added things in there, such as allowing companies to get tax refunds on taxes they paid many years longer ago than would normally be the case, and pushing this idea of a $3,000 per employee hiring credit for companies. And it seems to be working. We've heard positive noises coming out of the Republican leadership in the last day or so.
There was talk of having this on his desk on January 20th, inauguration day for his signature. Then that seems to be by the boards. When might something be ready for passed by Congress, both houses, and on the president's desk?
Yeah, I think that the notion of having it signed within a day or so of inauguration is turning out to be just not doable. But Obama has said that by the end of January or early February, in mid-February, he will present us with his own draft budget, where hopefully he'll sort of not just outline some of the positive or attractive things he's doing for taxpayers, but some of his plans for dealing with the much more serious long-term fiscal situation.
What about that? Obama is saying in his prepared remarks today, as you and I speak, he's about to go to the podium within an hour or so. But others will hear after he's spoken already. But he says in his text that he won't just throw money at our problems. A mindful quality there of the huge deficits building. On the other hand, he said trillion-dollar deficits could go on for years.
Yeah, Tom, you know, I try to give him credit for what he's saying, and he says all the right things about wanting to avoid waste and to spend money wisely. But frankly, we've heard this from Congresses and presidents for a very long time, and I'm a little disappointed that mostly when he talks about restraint, he's talking about things like waste and earmarks. And anybody who looks at the numbers carefully knows that these are trivial amounts of money in the scheme of the size of our budget. The thing that's really going to crush us in the future, and everybody knows this, is the growing cost of funding the Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid benefits at a time when the population is getting older. And it's a big disappointment that Bush came into office talking tough about dealing with our long-term problems, and he leaves 8 years later not only not having dealt with them, but in many ways made them worse with additional tax cuts and the introduction of a new Medicare drug benefit. I think it's vital that Obama take this opportunity not just to, in some sense, give us the goodies with respect to these short-term tax cuts and spending increases, but also convince voters that they have to swallow the long-term medicine of putting those programs on a sustainable path.
So there's long-term and short-term, and Obama is signaling, I know about the long-term problem, trying to say we'll be good on that front. But the immediate stimulus, huge, is not described as goodies. It's described as urgently needed, crucial. I mean, he's talking about, a very bad economy and like possibly getting worse. Is there a consensus about whether or not this enormous stimulus will work? We had stimulus this year and it didn't work. This is much bigger. But on Capitol Hill, among economists, is there a sense, this will work?
There's certainly a sense that it's needed, but that's not the same as saying that it will work. But we can be certain that it won't work if we don't do it. It's interesting that some of the larger and more ambitious stimulus proposals have come from Republicans, not from Democrats. They're the ones talking about figures of $1 trillion or more over the next 2 years. The situation you have, Tom, is that we've got a collapse in private spending. It seems that households and businesses, either because they can't or won't borrow, are all trying to save more at once. And if that all happens, we have a situation where demand collapses and huge numbers of people lose their jobs. In that situation, the only actor out there that can borrow more and spend it is the federal government. And so, yes, the case for a very big fiscal stimulus now, even though it will aggravate the deficit, is a strong one. It's the longer term you have to worry about, because at some point, investors will say, we've lent you all this money to keep the economy out of a depression right now. How are you going to pay it back?
Obama's described the potential downside, a generation, he said, of lost promise and potential if it's not addressed. If it does work, what kind of timetable are people imagining that this might turn around on? If it's kicking in, should something be happening by the end of this year, 2009?
I think even the most optimistic people do not think that a fiscal stimulus package, even of the magnitude being discussed now, will pull us out of recession anytime soon. At the best, it will mitigate the downturn we're having. The forecasts out there, Tom, are that we will perhaps see growth by the second half of the year, but I think there's a pretty good case that we should brace for something worse. I mean, we've seen research recently looking at the aftermath of banking crises in other countries. Those things go on for several years. If we were to follow that template, we'd have the unemployment rate over 10% by the time this is over. But that doesn't mean we shouldn't do this, of course. It simply means that it's more necessary than ever just to prevent some of the even far worse scenarios from coming to pass.
Greg Ipp, U.S. Economics Editor for The Economist magazine. Always good to talk with you. Thanks for joining us, Greg.
Good to talk to you, Tom.
With us now from Washington, Christian Weller, economist and senior fellow at the Center for American Progress, a think tank with close ties to President-elect Obama. He's a professor of public policy at the University of Massachusetts, Boston, former researcher at the Economic Policy Institute, a progressive think tank. Christian Weller, thanks very much for being here.
Thank you very much for having me, Tom.
So you've got a progressive perspective. We've all seen now the outline, the kind of pie chart of how Barack Obama would, broad stroke, like to see the stimulus deployed, $775 billion and maybe more. Do you think he's on the right track? Some on the sort of progressive side are saying, what's up with all these tax cuts? We need straight-up spending, sir.
Well, I think he is on the right track. I think what we need at this point is a stimulus that's quick, that's large, and that's efficient. And I think the proposed outline, what we've seen so far from the Obama team, meets those goals. It's large. We have a problem that is massive. Greg Gibb outlined this very nicely. I just looked at the housing numbers. By all measures, we have some of the worst housing market numbers at this point since the Great Depression. And so clearly something needs to happen, and it is not coming from the private sector side. And the federal government is in a much better position than the state and local governments to step in because of different budget rules. So I think the question is, and I think progressives and conservatives agree that we need something large. That probably means $800 to $900 billion over the next 2 years. And then the question is, how do you get the money out quickly? And while certainly spending is important because it does have large follow-on effects in the private sector side, if you spend dollars, you make sure it actually goes into the economy. You don't just cross your fingers that people will spend the extra tax dollars that they save. So there is an efficiency thing, but it does take some time to actually spend dollars to make sure that money goes into transit projects and weatherization and everything else. So tax cuts, the ones that President-elect Obama has proposed, have the advantage that they're quick. In particular, he's proposing to give tax cuts for the individual of $500 for a couple of up to $1,000. That's money that goes directly to people and that can, through lower payroll taxes in particular.
So you think it's good? It's not just to buy Republican votes in, but it's actually,
in
your view, good?
The biggest chunks that he's proposing, in particular the tax cut, the $500 per person, it's something that can get out very quickly. I mean, that was the bulk of the original stimulus in early 2008, which you already have mentioned.
We see what that did and what it didn't do. Christian Weller, hold the thought. We have to take a short break here. We're talking about the Obama stimulus, its shape, its politics, and whether it can really save the economy. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the Obama stimulus, its shape, its politics. Will Obama's $700 billion, $800 billion, trillion-dollar stimulus turn this economy around? Were you surprised to see big tax cuts in there? Is that great? Is that a political sop to Republicans? And are you worried that we'll overspend on the stimulus? Or is it time to turn on all the taps? The language out there is absolutely dire this week. President-elect Obama, using some pretty fierce language himself, Wisconsin Congressman David Obie yesterday talking about a death spiral with NPR's Morning Edition. Here he is making the case for pumping stimulus into the economy now and for funding infrastructure projects, roads, bridge building, that would create jobs immediately.
Every month that we delay, we see a rapid downward death spiral of this economy. I think everybody understands that governors and state highway commissions have a pretty good idea of what's needed at the state level. There are going to be no earmarks in this package in the House. We're going to leave it up to the people who know the most about what's ready to go.
Ready to go sounds good. Death spiral. This is scary talk. Christian Weller is with us. He's an economist at senior fellow at the Center for American Progress, a think tank close to President-elect Obama, joining us from Washington. Joining us as well right now from Palo Alto, California, is John Taylor, professor of economics at Stanford University. He was an economic advisor to Senator John McCain. He and Larry Summers mixed it up during the summer on our show. He's a senior fellow at the Hoover Institution. John Taylor, thank you very much for being here.
It's good to be here, Tom.
So at this point, even conservatives, Martin Feldstein is saying, we've got to go to fiscal policy. Monetary policy isn't going to cut it. We have to do it. Are you in the same boat? Does this stimulus plan for a conservative like you, does it have to pass? Do we have to go?
Well, I think there's parts of this plan that are missing. For example, you're talking about the tax side, but that's the same kind of one-time payments, rebates that we sent out in 2008 and didn't do much good, I think, as you said earlier in the program, Tom. So what I think there should be in this program is some pledges not to be increasing taxes. We got a big tax increase coming in 2010. Let's make sure that doesn't happen. And let's make the proposal for the middle class tax cut permanent rather than a one-time rebate.
Christian Weller, how about it? There is talk that Obama may just let President Bush's tax cuts go on because the economy is so weak now that he might indeed push to see them extended. What do you expect, not just on a one-time basis, but on a longer-term basis on taxes here? On the one hand, John Taylor argues those fire up the economy. On the other, we've got this big deficit, and people have made the case that we've underpaid on taxes.
Not every tax cut is equal. I think the important piece here is to take a hard look at the tax cuts that we've had enacted in 2001 and 2003 and take a hard look at which ones worked and which ones didn't. I would expect the Obama administration will stay with its pledges from the campaign and largely extend a number of those tax cuts, especially for taxpayers below $250,000 a year. I do expect that the Obama administration, though, will take a harder look at some of the higher income tax cuts, but also some of the tax cuts on dividends and capital gains, because I think the economic case there is very hard to make. They were enacted with a promise of boosting investment spending and employment, and this just simply didn't happen. So I think what we're going to have is we're going to have a tax reform discussion that will follow the stimulus discussion, just largely because, as Professor Taylor pointed out, a lot of the tax cuts are expiring in 2010. So we're going to have a tax reform discussion, and that will require a hard look at some of the tax cuts and their economic effectiveness, largely because you're looking at these massive deficits.
John Taylor, what about the very scale of this? We heard Greg Gipps say earlier in the hour from The Economist that some Republicans are pushing for some of the bigger numbers, a trillion and even up. Barack Obama's talking $775 billion today. Larry Summers, who was with you on this show debating stimulus in last summer, wrote recently, he said, in this, and of course he'll be chair of the National Economic Council for Obama, he wrote, in this crisis, doing too little poses a greater threat than doing too much. You know, too little, too much, just right. Where do you see this headed?
Well, a couple things. You know, so far the government has tried to do a tremendous amount. We've had a huge stimulus package last year. It didn't do any good. In fact, I think it made things worse by delaying some real changes that should have happened in the banking sector. You can't just think because government is there that it's going to be the solution. But to be specific, second part, Tom, I think there is a concern about this being too big. You know, just yesterday, the Congressional Budget Office came out with an estimate that we already have a huge stimulus in the works. The budget deficit is going to be, you know, $1.2 trillion without this stimulus. I call that stimulus. So there is a concern here about this becoming too big and too much debt. Absolutely, we need to be very careful. I don't think it's a partisan issue, Republicans versus Democrats. I think this is something that sensible people are going to look at and say, too much, and we should be careful.
Christian Weller, how do you look at that? On the other hand, Paul Krugman got the Nobel Prize recently, and he's talking, saying he's worried about Obama's weakness, that he won't go far enough, fast enough, big enough. Too big, too small, just right, the proposal so far, Christian?
I think so far we have arrived at a size that's about right. You got to remember when we first started talking in the summer about a second stimulus, the order of magnitude was $100 billion. Mm-hmm. Then we went to $300 billion. And I think ultimately we're settling in around $800 billion. And if you look at the numbers, also the Congressional Budget Office numbers from yesterday, they look bad for the economy going forward. And the Congressional Budget Office is without a stimulus projecting that the economy will shrink by 2.2% this year. So I think something really has to happen, and it is not coming from the private sector at this point. The housing numbers in particular are stunningly bad. So I think the important part is, yes, we have a number of things in the pipeline through the TARP program, but something in addition needs to happen because the private sector, both the real economy and the financial markets, seem to be stalled at this point. And given the numbers that we're looking at in terms of economic growth and the rising unemployment, what we do need is something that is large, order of magnitude, $800 to $900 billion for the next 2 years, to really jumpstart economic growth and put a stronger foundation for economic growth for the long run.
But what's your confidence there? The scale gives you comfort. We hear that. On the other hand, we heard former Labor Secretary Robert Reich saying yesterday, this is an experiment, kind of a rolling experiment. We don't know. I mean, how? What's your degree of confidence that a stimulus on this scale, which, as you say, is much larger than what we saw before, but we had a big one before, it will do it? Or is this still just kind of a crapshoot?
If I was very confident, I probably would be gambling on Wall Street right now. To some degree, this is a new world. This is, as Krugman said, not your father's business cycle or your grandfather's business cycle. There is a lot of unknowns out there. We've never had debt levels at the private sector and the household sector this high since World War II. So there's a number of those factors that certainly make the predictions very hard. I think we've seen in the last few years what doesn't work, in particular some of the tax cuts at the very high end of the income scale, but also corporate tax cuts and capital gains tax cuts and dividend tax cuts didn't do the trick. So I think you ultimately narrowing things down and saying, well, what didn't work, let's try things that we haven't tried before and that have worked in the past, such as, for instance, improving the unemployment benefits, but also direct spending or money to aid to the states to maintain existing programs. Those things tend to have a good track record. They have worked in the past. So there's a fair level of confidence that they will work again this time around. But again, to some degree, this is trial and error.
John Taylor, I want to come to you on that. Let me get our listeners in first. Bill in Arlington, Virginia. You're on the air, Bill.
Hi, Tom. I'm very disturbed by listening to economists both on the right and the left. By the way, I am an economist by training, who talk about stimulus but don't talk about how to pay for it. And I'd like to put a proposal out on the table that in terms of how we would pay for it as we go along. I think you can make a very compelling case that since Wall Street and the financial sector have been primarily responsible for this mess, that they should primarily be the ones who pay for it.
With what? Aren't they in a ditch? Aren't they in the dumps?
No. If you look at the markets, there's still a lot of trading going on. And what I would suggest is, number one, a very small fee per unit of stock traded. So, like, if you're talking about just a number out of the air, 0.1%, if you trade $1,000 worth of stock, you pay $1 on that transaction. Second, a similar fee on commodity futures trades, perhaps a slightly larger fee on derivative trades, and the fourth would be something like what was proposed by Nobel economist James Tobin, the Tobin tax, which would be a very small fee on current international currency transactions.
Bill, you're an economist. Does all of that, even if that were put through, come close to paying for what could be $1 trillion stimulus?
Absolutely. If you are talking about small amounts on enormous amounts of trade, you could possibly raise $1 trillion a year on this.
Let us pick it up. John Taylor, you hear Bill's concern about how to pay for it. How do we pay for it, in your view? And what about having Wall Street pay for it?
Well, the first thing is not to make it so big so that we don't have to borrow so much. And a tax increase like's being suggested, that could be very harmful.
Increase? You mean on Wall Street that Bill's just...
No, our caller Bill's just suggesting a tax increase on Wall Street could be very harmful. It might sound small, but lots of trading goes on. You don't want to hurt the financial markets right now. That could hurt the economy even more. That's really one of the problems, is the credit market. So I'd be against that. But I do have a lot of sympathy with this being such a large package at the time that the deficit is increasing so much anyway. And our experience with these kinds of package is not good. There's not a lot of historical evidence.
But should we be thinking about how to pay for it, or is that for down the road? Is this the wrong time to put out the, you know,
I don't think
it's fire now?
I think it's very important to lay out a plan, and I hope the administration does this, about how we're going to come back to a balanced budget. It's not enough just to say we need a big $1 trillion for a number of years deficit. I think that worries people. Talking about $1 trillion deficits, as far as the eyes can see, is not the way to go. You need to have a path to get back to balance. We do need that very, very strongly.
On the other hand, we read that without that kind of talk, investors may be afraid to get into the economy and gear it up again. Let's go to Bristol, Rhode Island.
I disagree with that.
We'll come to it, Professor
sure.
Taylor. Patrick in Bristol, Rhode Island, you're on the air, Patrick.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yeah.
I sort of agree. I feel as though it is Wall Street's fault, primarily, but at the same time, I also feel it's the American people at large that really need to take a look at themselves and change the way they live. And I'm graduating college this spring, and it's sort of like very. I'm dismayed at the job market and pretty much just our country as a nation. And I sort of feel like, yes, it's Wall Street's fault, and something needs to be done. But I think more importantly, something needs to be done with people of my generation that will be leading us into the future and providing us with hope and just with basics like jobs and that kind of thing.
So let me ask you, Patrick, then. You're graduating college in the worst economy maybe since the Great Depression. Is Barack Obama's line, his stimulus, giving you hope?
You know, it won't be giving me hope until, A, I see it and I see a plan that's taking action. I think this stimulus package has the potential to give a lot of people hope. But I think we're a country that needs to see instant gratification happen. And that's not the idea with this plan. I think that's the problem for this country is that we're looking for the quick fix, and that's not going to happen.
Well, we need something quickly here, though. We wish you good luck stepping out into that economy, Patrick. Thank you very much for calling. Let me get a call from Stan in Newton, Massachusetts. Stan, you're on the air.
Yes. Hi, Tom. I'd like to pick up on the previous caller, Bill, about how we're going to pay for the deficit financing. In today's New York Times, there's a report that the Chinese government is starting to pull back from its underwriting of a lot of U.S. debt.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yes, it's still stepping up to billions of dollars, but because of its own economic problems, it's starting to focus more on investing internally rather than investing in U.S. debt.
Mm-hmm.
I think going down the road, whether it's China or Japan or European companies, if the expectation is that the rest of the world is going to bail out all of this deficit financing down
mm-hmm.
the road, I think we have to think to look seriously as to whether that's really going to happen or whether we're going to see a situation where in order to attract this foreign capital to pay for all of this deficit financing, interest rates are going to have to go up. And is that going to really be counterproductive to what we're trying to accomplish here?
Stan, I'm glad you asked that. It's a question right on the front of my mind as well. And Christian Weller, let me come first to you. It was very stark this morning. Front page, New York Times headline, China losing taste for debt from U.S. And at the very same time this week, we've got President-elect Obama predicting maybe trillion-dollar deficits, quote, for years to come. Now, how do you have that both ways, Christian? Can we?
Well, I think for some time we can. But it's certainly something to worry about. Even though the Chinese have made these moves and noises in the past, they ultimately haven't withdrawn very quickly. They have slowed their purchases of some of the U.S. treasuries and some of their investments in the U.S. But generally, we tend to be the largest capital market in the world. We still tend to be one of the best regulated, one of the best investments for others. And they tend to have billions and trillions of dollars that need to go somewhere.
But with respect, it sounds like you're whistling past the graveyard here. The report is that the pullback has already started.
Well, the Chinese have started to reallocate some of their money for years. They're holding over $1 trillion in U.S. assets.
Mm-hmm.
They're not going to withdraw very quickly. There's still a lot of money coming in. And then there's other investors, especially in Europe, but also in the Middle East, who still are sitting on billions and trillions of dollars that need to go somewhere. And as I said, like the logical place to put the money, especially in the middle of a crisis, is the U.S. capital markets. So I'm not that worried about it in the short run. If Obama was talking for deficits to come for the next 20 years, that's certainly a different ballgame. But for the next 2 years, that's not that big of an issue.
Though years to come sounds like more than 2 years when he says trillions for years to come. Christian,
we're probably looking at, you're looking at for the next two budget years probably large deficits, but then it's going to shrink very rapidly because nobody's expecting the stimulus to keep on going after 2010, 2011. So I think that's the other part, that this is a temporary measure. There is an expectation that the stimulus will be temporary. The outlays will be temporary. But let me go back to the point of how to pay for it. I think there needs to be an ongoing discussion, and Greg already pointed at this, that you ultimately need to move beyond just simply saying, like, we're going to cut out waste. This does require discussion over entitlements, in particular on the healthcare side. And I think the sooner the Obama administration can start talking about healthcare reform, And what measures they see coming online to reduce healthcare inflation, I think that will help to ultimately address some of these budget fears too.
Christian Weller, stand by. And John Taylor, I want to come back and ask you the question on interest rates. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about the Obama stimulus. Ron's calling from Charlottesville, Virginia. Ron, you're on the air.
Thanks, Tom. Good to talk with you. I didn't spend my money. I spent my money the way I normally do with the last stimulus check. I think it's a ridiculously horrible idea. I can't believe they're doing it again. I say you take that money, the $500 per person, you bundle it together, you create jobs where people are making $30,000, $40,000 a year. Those people will go out and spend their money. People will be more optimistic about the economy because they're working.
Let us look at that. John Taylor, you hear Ron saying, look, I got the rebate. I didn't spend it. I guess he saved it. Maybe others paid down credit cards. There's a balance in the plan, as we understand it so far, between tax cuts and rebates on the one hand and infrastructure spending, which does mean the kind of jobs that I guess Ron is talking about. How do you decide on the right balance there, Professor Taylor?
Well, Ron is exactly right. The last stimulus package didn't do any good, and the parts of this stimulus package which are similar, such as the one-time checks, will also not do any good. I don't know why people are surprised about that. It's basic economic theory. We've known it for many years. One-time payments like this don't jumpstart the economy. So what's important, if any tax cuts be longer lasting and last a number of years, so people will have incentives to hire people in good jobs.
But President Bush and the Republican congressmen were pretty eager also to push that stimulus out earlier in 08. I mean, this was,
you know, as I mentioned, Tom, this is not a partisan issue. I agree 100%. I have a great deal of criticism for those decisions. In fact, I think a lot of government decisions in the last year are responsible for where we are. So to say the government is going to come to the rescue at this point is rather bizarre given what has happened.
But you've said in the past, permanent tax cuts are the way to go. And we had those with George W. Bush, and we're still in this horrible bind.
Don't forget that those tax cuts were passed in 2001, permanent, and they got us out very quickly. That was a very mild recession. One of the mildest recessions we've ever had.
Well, out for a while, but here we are.
Well, it's a long business cycle later. It's you don't want to look at tax cuts in 2001 as affecting events in 2008. In fact, you want to look at what happened in you want to look at what happened in 2008. The stimulus and those rebate checks did not do very much good, and we're trying to do the same kind of thing. Well, one more thing here about the you asked about the infrastructure spending.
Yes.
Some people compare it to the 1950s and the Eisenhower road building program, which was extraordinarily valuable, but it didn't help us get out of recessions in the 1950s. We had recessions in the 1950s. No economist has tried to show that they helped us get out of those. So that logic is also quite flawed. So what I think is important here is to look at history, look at what's happened in the past, and have something that doesn't increase our debt, doesn't require us to depend on the Chinese. What a foreign policy mess we'll be in if we're depending on the Chinese to help us get out of this crisis, and hope that they don't stop lending to us.
But that sounds like the Herbert Hoover solution that you know, sort of
absolutely not. The Herbert Hoover solution was to raise taxes and restrict trade. I think right now the solution that I hear is in 2010 we're going to raise taxes. That would not be a good idea. Raise taxes on dividends, capital gains, small businesses. That's what's in the cards. That's a Hoover policy, and we should not do that.
It is raining economists today. We've got another on the line calling in from Boston, Lawrence Kotlikoff, economist at Boston University. Professor Kotlikoff, thanks for calling. What do you think?
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I think we need a stimulus package. I think we need to, the way it should work is to pay the states to cut their sales taxes, actually make them negative, to reduce the prices by 10% for retail goods and services across the country for about 6 months.
Well, hold on. That you mean the state would actually subsidize my purchase of that next television?
Yeah. So in Massachusetts, for example, the 5% sales tax would be gone for 6 months, and then they'd actually lower the tax to negative 5% so that you'd actually be subsidized. So the whole price reduction would be 10% for you for 6 months.
But aren't the states broke already?
No. The federal government would reimburse the states for this.
Wow.
So this would be a federal program. It just would be one in which people have incentives to spend and spend right away over the next 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, as others have indicated, this tax cut could otherwise be saved. You want to give people an incentive to actually spend, and this would do it.
Christian Weller, how about it? I mean, there's straight-up subsidized purchases to get consumption going again. Would that work? If people don't have jobs, they don't have anything to spend in the first place.
Right. I think at this point people have income needs, and I think the interesting part here is to give people more income. I mean, the proposals that are on the table are give the temporary tax cuts that were already mentioned to boost people's incomes, and then the other one would be to extend the unemployment rate, the unemployment benefit, to really help those who are most in need, who need the income boost, and I think that's the one part. The other part is also the stimulus proposal includes already more money for the states, and I think it should be left to the states how they're spending that money.
Well, what about that? Obama is saying they're going to be very transparent on that spending. He wants to get it to states where they'll know what the needs are right away, but anyone at the state level knows there's waste there as well. Christian Weller, are you confident that the states are situated in a way to do this huge spending quickly in a way that's effective both for the economy long term and for the immediate crisis? Are they really set up to do that?
Well, I think the most important part that the aid to the states would do is maintain existing programs. The waste argument is always a red herring. There isn't that much waste in government spending. I mean, the money is meant to go to health care, to education in particular, so that states can maintain their existing programs.
I thought we were going to rebuild America's infrastructure, roads, bridges.
That's a separate proposal.
Isn't that state also?
That would ultimately, a lot of these programs are through the states, but that is a separate issue, and there you're looking really at the shovel-ready programs. You're looking at programs, especially highway construction, but also mass transit, things that are already online that could be on very quickly. That is a separate issue. What Obama is proposing is, on the one hand, give aid to the states for health care and education so they can maintain existing programs and cut back in the middle of this crisis and lay off people in the middle of this crisis, and cut back on programs that people need to rely on, especially in the middle of a crisis. But then there is the separate part of the green recovery efforts to spend money on energy efficiency and infrastructure measures and so on and so forth. And those are, I think, there you will have to go program by program to evaluate their value.
John Taylor, the question of interest rates came up earlier with all of this lending and borrowing. They've been low, and they're low right now. Federal cost of borrowing has really fallen this year. Perhaps Obama's looking at that as an opportunity to borrow right now. But how long can that last? And are you concerned about where interest rates go as we go deeper into these multi-year trillion-dollar deficits that he's described as possible?
Well, interest rates are quite low. Partly it's a flight to quality. Treasury bill rates extraordinarily low. It's a symptom that banks don't want to lend to the private sector. It's a reflection of the problems in the credit markets. But they will rise as the economy recovers. Hopefully it will recover before too long in 2009, so rates will rise. And then if we're stuck with a huge amount of debt, trillions of dollars of deficits, as far as we can see, then that's going to be very troublesome with respect to crowding other types of investment and interest rates, exactly.
It's Lawrence Kotlikoff, thanks very much for your call. Let's get one from Cecily in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Cecily, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I think we all know that there's been this growing inequity in America, and we often focus on the many folks who've been losing ground and whose lives have gotten increasingly, stressed and desperate. But there's another side to this, which is that there's still a lot of wealth in this country. It's just more concentrated. It's concentrated in the hands of people who've done phenomenally well
Yep.
in the last few years, and their wealth has been protected by tax policy under sort of the guise of economic stimulus. So I don't see how we can I feel like tax increases are essential and should be directed towards that group of people And that it's criminal to talk about cutting medical care when there are people who are making millions and millions of dollars, to talk about people who are facing life or death decisions. I mean, this country has to go back to its ideals of equity and fairness, and the tax code should reflect that. That's how deficit, that we should not be running up these deficits. We should be really looking at, you know, how do we finance the services that people need?
Yeah, Cecily, we've got it. So open the vault. Maybe Christian Weller, how about it? You're the progressive economist. Cecily says, you know, hey, let's unlock the treasure chest that's been built up at the high end of American wealth and income, and use that to pay for this jolt to the economy. Would that work even hypothetically?
Well, it wouldn't really work to pay for $1 trillion. I think there is substantial amounts of money, both in terms of wealth and income, at the high end. But the larger point that Cecily made, that is, we have had rapidly rising inequality. We have large inequality, in some cases extreme inequality. It's certainly something that I think we need to keep in mind, and has already started to become part of the discussion. In particular, there is a discussion over how we treat income earned in hedge funds and private equity funds. And I expect that to be part of the discussion when we have tax reform. In particular, partners in a private equity firm pay lower income, lower tax rates on the income that they earn as partners than people who work for any corporations and who make money. Often they pay lower tax rates than their secretaries. I think that's certainly going to be part of the tax reform discussion that we're going to have in the next few years, how you're going to treat some of those tax shelters for high-income earners, for very wealthy individuals. To be fair, I think we're not looking really at covering $1 trillion a year from that, but it's certainly part of the overall tax reform discussion.
John Taylor, I expect you'll push back, but what about the wealth that's grown at the upper end in recent decades in this country? Is that related to working our way out of the economic hole we're in now? You hear Cecily's suggestion, go and get some of that.
Well, I think there has been an increased disparity. A lot of it occurred in the 90s. In fact, I think when you look back at the first decade of this century, you'll see much less rapid dispersion, especially with this recession. You know, one of the reasons the tax revenues are plummeting so much is people in the upper ends are doing even worse. They're just huge amounts of declines. And so the income distribution spread is there. It occurred mainly in the 90s, I think, especially with this recession, it's much less severe. But I would say the concern I would have right now at tough economic times like this is just raising taxes. That's, as you mentioned earlier, Tom, what Herbert Hoover did. And that made things so much worse. You don't want to raise taxes on the businesses that could hire people. You don't want to raise taxes on the stock markets, which are already so low and have cut into people's retirement so severely. You want to go back and try to increase those gains, not to reduce them by taxing them more.
But eventually we've got to get closer to some kind of balance. We can't have $1 trillion deficits forever, and everybody
absolutely
seems to agree we need the spending now. So,
well, absolutely, we need to get the deficit down. As I said before, let's not talk about $1 trillion deficits as far as the eye can see or for several years. Let's have a plan, and this should be part of the stimulus plan, of getting to balance maybe at the end of the Obama's first term, maybe in 8 years, however he wants to put it. But I think it's a very important thing not to just keep borrowing and borrowing and borrowing for these short-term fixes, which don't seem to work.
Christian Weller, there's this balance we can kind of hear in the air between what Obama may want to do, and certainly progressives on his flank. On the other side, he's reaching out to Republicans here. Everyone's reporting he'd like to have a lot of Republicans signing on with this. Do you think that's the right tack for this new president coming into office, to try and balance and bring in a lot of Republicans, take into account John Taylor's view and others on the right? Or should he be saying, no, that was the last 8 years. Now we need to, you know, unlock a real stimulus, old style, New Deal, left style?
I think it's Obama style to reach out and find a broad consensus, a broad basis for his policies. I think the logic here is if you find broad support for the policies that are being enacted, they are sustainable. And I think that the buy-in that you're looking for is what Professor Taylor was pointing out, something I think we're going to see more of the discussion over, like, what will happen in the years after the stimulus, how the Obama administration is planning on reducing the deficits. I think at this point, this is a sales job of convincing people, in Congress in particular, that you do need a stimulus of the size and magnitude and speed that is being proposed by the Bush, by the Obama administration. I think, but this will gradually morph into a discussion of how you're going to pay for it, and I would expect substantial noise to be made about this and about the deficit reductions that are expected to happen afterwards in the coming years. So I think, and for that, that is a big bipartisan discussion. I agree that this is not neither a Democrat nor Republican issue. A lot of conservatives have argued for large stimulus packages, but I think everybody's ultimately worried about how you're going to pay for it. So I think the big change here from the previous administration will be reaching across the aisles and finding a broad consensus for the policies that have to be enacted to get the economy back on track.
John Taylor, we've just got half a minute, literally. From the conservative angle, do you see Republicans coming on with Obama here? Is what he has put on the table something that you think will have a lot of GOP support for?
I think that Republicans have some other things they'd like on the table, such as I mentioned, not increasing taxes and trying to make the middle class tax cut more permanent and worrying about the increased deficit. So I think it is very important to bring people together, and I applaud that. I think it's very important, and it's needed in this country.
Sounds like the votes are coming. Whether the economy is coming, another question. John Taylor, professor of economics at Stanford University, thank you very much, Professor Taylor, for being with us today.
Thank you, Tom.
And Christian Weller at the Center for American Progress, joining us today from Washington. Christian, thank you so much for your time and thoughts.
Thank you very much for having me, Tom.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.